In the KSRO kitchen, I'm Steve Garner, along with everybody's side-by-side chef, John Ash, who's right there to guide you and has been guiding you for 38 years. It's America's longest-running radio food program. And this week, we got some great news. Do you remember Lucas Wharf, John?
Yeah, I do.
Well,
I do.
Being locals like we are, we've been dining there since the mid-1980s when the Lucas brothers founded Lucas Wharf.
Yeah.
And it was a great spot to go. We had such a wonderful time out there. And then they sold it a few years ago, and the new owner decided business was just not up to par and during COVID. And all of a sudden, out of the blue, closed it last March 2023.
I didn't know.
It was a shock that it happened.
Yeah.
And all of us who go out to Bodega Bay regularly drive past going, well, what's going to go in here? Is it going to be some big corporation from Pier 39 in San Francisco come up and lose all the local flavor? Will there be a local restaurateur to come in? And luckily, we have a local guy who first sat in our KSRO studio back in 2009 when he opened what was called and still is called Rocker Oyster Fellers. It's Chef Brandon Gunther. Good morning, Brandon.
Good morning. How are you, Mr. Gardner, Mr. Ash?
Wow, you were just a youngster 15 years ago when we met you.
Yeah, I'm a little more gray these days.
So, if you wouldn't mind, can you tell the story of how your restaurant got its name?
Oh, sure. That's a fun one. So we were actually, we fell in love with the Valley Forge Hotel, which is where our original restaurant's located that opened in 2006. So a couple of years before we went on the air with you, and we were looking at it, and we were out with my mom, and we're actually at Marshall's store, back when their liquor license allowed you to drink out on their deck out there, and we're having some champagne. It was a nice, warm, sunny day, and we're sitting there talking about, you know, what we would call it and what kind of concept it would be. And my mom doesn't drink much, so she has about a glass in, and she got a little loopy on the way home. Anyway, we ate a bunch of oysters. And she said, those were the best Rocker Oyster Fellers I've ever had.
I thought
that was a perfect name because we wanted, you know, we didn't want to be snotty Sonoma food, high-end. We wanted to be very casual where everybody was welcome. They could come in on their board shorts or they could dress up for a date or however they were.
Wow. So you actually owe this to alcohol.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Like most things.
Yeah, you know, it's the cause of and solution to all of life's problems, I think.
Right.
Well, you've been really successful. My gosh, another couple of years, you'll have, 20 years there in that location in Valley Forge, huh?
That's right. Yeah, we're on 18 this year.
So what else is in Valley Forge? There's not much there.
Cheese. Good cheese.
Right. You know what? When we first opened, the town was very dead, and the Valley Forge Hotel had been closed for about a year and a half, I think, at that point. Everything was kind of shuttered across the street. There wasn't much going on except for a small little cafe, the Valley Forge Market, and Danucci's, which has been there for 200 years.
Yeah.
So that was pretty much all that was going on in town. Now it's flourishing, right? Everything's open. So we've got the Estero Cafe that moved in across the street, into that little deli. So they're open. We've got Danucci's is still there. Obviously, the Valley Forge Market has taken over new ownership too. And then Karen Breda out of one of the big dairies out of the Breda Dairy that's been there for three generations started her cheese company, the Valley Forge Cheese Company.
So when
she opened a big beautiful store across the street.
Lucas Wharf closed a year ago, did you immediately start thinking about this as a possible location? How did this idea germinate? What was the steps involved?
So we live in Bodega Bay, and we have for years. But we always looked at that spot. Not that we were ever looking for another spot, but we always said if that spot ever came available, that's the only one we'd have to consider taking. Never thinking that it would, but it did. And we immediately started after it. And ended up
did it take all this time to kind of get everything, the deal done until just a couple of weeks ago or so?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it took a little while, a lot of negotiations and a little back and forth on their end. And plus, you know, that was in March. So we immediately got on it. Said we need to make this work. If it's going to work, it's got to happen. If it's going to open, it's going to have to be now, because you know we don't want to. It's very seasonal out in Bodega Bay.
Yeah.
Less and less since COVID, but there's still a big season. And we didn't want to get into it in the wintertime and then have have to go through months of slow.
And wasn't Lucas Wharf involved in fishing also? Was that the tides?
Yeah, no. Lucas Wharf is also an active. It's an active fishing wharf, so boats come in and unload. I believe the company is Dandy Fish Company that's out there operating it now. So it's them, and then the Fishitarian also is next door. You know, which was the original deli before they built the big restaurant.
Right.
That deli goes back to I don't know if it's the '60s or seventies, but yeah. For a while, they operated just that before they built the restaurant out.
So what is your menu going to be? Is it going to be the same as Valley Ford, or is it a different menu?
Well, so now we have the Fishitarian next door, right?
Yeah.
So we're kind of sharing a parking lot with them. And our menu has a lot of carryover items, say for the Fishitarian, fish tacos and the chowder and the fish and chips and things like that here and there.
And let me ask you, are you somewhere, because we're getting a lot of noise on your mobile. Are you somewhere?
Sounds like wind.
Wind or something?
Yeah, I'm outside. It's wind. I'll block it. Is that better?
Yeah.
That is better, yes. So you've got a lot of competition seafood-wise with the tides and with Fishitarian. But being in Bodega Bay, are you planning on adding some seafood entrees to the menu?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, so we'll be seafood. But the place inside is beautiful, right? It's all wood.
Yeah.
It's all mahogany and brass. So just we'd go in there and sit in there and let it talk to us and kind of, what would I want to see on the menu if I were coming in here? And so it feels more like a steak and seafood house to me with all the brass and things. And there's a restaurant in New Orleans that's one of our favorite places to go for lunch and sit at the bar, which is called Mr. B's. That's been there forever.
Yeah,
I don't know
if you've
been
there.
Do you know it, John?
I do know it. Yeah,
So that's kind of our inspiration behind Lucas, like what we envision it being, not quite as the black tie setup, but we'd like to keep it accessible, but still put some really nice, steaks on the menu and get a little heavier into the seafood as far as big plates are concerned.
Wow.
And are you going to do more Southern-inspired cocktails? Because your restaurant always had a very strong Southern bent to it.
Right, yeah. So Gulf Coast is kind of the underlying concept there, meets California fresh. So, the southern food as it goes along the coast of Texas and New Orleans. My wife's from Gulf Coast, Texas, so we head there a lot and actually heading there now. We're on our way. So that's always been a big inspiration after cooking with her grandparents, and her father is an excellent chef too. Not professionally, but excellent cook. So after cooking with them for so long, I just kind of fell in love with the concept. And thought it's a really nice segue. It can be, as you can make it as nice and fancy and high-end as you want, or it can be just as simple as can be, and simple flavors, with ingredient focused is the other side of it.
Well, so you're in such an extraordinary spot, having access to all of that stuff that's coming in fresh.
Right.
Though you had that at Valley Ford also. You aren't that far away.
Oh, it's the middle of everywhere, right?
Yeah.
All the best produce coming in. We have all the best cheeses in the world. We've got some of the best seafood. Definitely, in my opinion, the best oysters in the world that I've ever had come out of Small Bay.
Oh, well, you would agree with that, wouldn't you, John?
Yeah.
Yeah, just the balance between salinity and sweetness are just, they're so beautiful.
Are you still going to have a happy hour at the new restaurant?
Oh, sure.
Okay.
Sure, we will.
And is it going to be called Rocker Oyster Fellers?
It will be. So we're going to call it Rocker Oyster Fellers Seaside.
Seaside. Smart.
Yeah, so Seaside will be the new name. We'll leave as much of the Lucas Wharf signage intact as we can, just because it's been there for so long, and to pay homage to it. But we'll plan on calling it Rocker Oyster Fellers Seaside.
So when is it open?
We are shooting for May, and it's all, depending on the governmental side of things and the red tape, but how fast they move. So we're at their mercy.
But luckily, so, it's pretty much a turnkey move-in operation. As I recall, last time I was there, it was beautiful interior-wise. How's the kitchen? Is it all up to specs, or do you need to go in and do anything?
It is. You know, I was nervous going through the equipment. Some of it's a little bit older, but we fired everything up, and it's running great. So, yeah, we did a little bit of maintenance on it, and everything's working fantastic.
So how many seats do you have there? It's a good sized restaurant.
It is. It's about 150 inside plus the patio.
Well, that's good.
So there's that nice sunny deck over the water too that you can sit there and watch the
Well, that's good to know because it used to be one of the great treats was to drive out to the coast and go to Lucas Wharf.
Yep.
Now Rocker Oysterfellers. Because there was room
to spread right. out. So we got right. the idea, kind of a more steakhouse, a little bit upscale, more seafood on the menu. Are you going to do any smoked items on that menu?
You know, because we have smokers, right? So we do the southern thing, which includes a little bit of barbecue. So we do brisket and ribs during the season. Yeah. And we have the really nice cabinet smoker that's locally produced out here. And we were going to thinking about starting a little bit of smoked fish program, but that's going to be a little ways in. We're going to get situated and comfortable in there first, and then we'll start playing around a little bit more.
So can I ask you a question from an ex-proprietor's point of view? Where do you find people to work out there?
So it's just funny because that was one of our main concerns too, but. The fact that everybody that worked there before loved it so much, just uh-huh. loves the feeling because it's got such a great feeling. You know, it's got a really nice energy to it, just like our Valley Ford location. That's the whole reason we fell in love with that hotel is because of the feeling that's in it. And I can't explain it. If it's an energy or whatever, I don't know, but it just feels good to be inside of it. And I felt the same way about Lucas Wharf. And we used to go there, you know, often. It was like our neighborhood go-to spot. So we were actually bittersweet and taking it over as proprietors because now we have one less spot that we can eat, you know, and enjoy ourselves because eating at your own restaurant is not very relaxing.
Well, it's wonderful that you and the missus are going to be the caretakers of Lucas Wharf, that it's going to continue. It's going to be called Rocker Oysterfellers Seaside. And if all goes according to plan, Brandon, we're hoping to see you out there sometime in May. That's the opening date, correct?
Sometime in May.
Correct. So would you let us know when that's set in stone so that we can
Absolutely.
Be the first in line?
Congratulations. We couldn't happen to a nicer couple than you guys from Rocker Oysterfellers. Best of luck, and we'll check in again soon.
That.
Thanks again.
Okay, sounds
Bye-bye.
Great. All right, thanks for having us.
Take care. Well, we wanted to continue the seafood theme because you wrote a fabulous article in this past week's Press Democrat called On Rockfish, and I don't remember, I don't think any time ever reading an article in the PD that was exclusively devoted to rockfish. What is rockfish?
Well, that's true. I think it's a fish that is widely available, often called other things like rock cod and all of that, and has other names. But it's one of those things that I'll bet you've had and you may not have known.
Okay, so it's caught locally off the coast.
Yeah. It's really a Northern California up to Alaska kind of thing, and it's a beautiful, beautiful fish, and it has all these extraordinary names associated with it, which I think adds to the confusion about it. You know, yellow eye and vermilion and all of that.
Canary.
And it looks like all of those, and it's striped, it's solid color, all of these beautiful colors, and it's a bottom fish that we used to, I think fish markets used to sell it as rock cod because it was inexpensive and all of that, but we've since found out that it has a long life cycle. It lives for up to 200 years and is not the prolific progenitor that we had often thought it was. So people have backed off a little bit, and the the feds have sort of
regulation.
Yeah, have sort of.
But you can see it in the market. It's here in our local markets.
Yeah, it is. Lockfish. Yeah, yeah.
What we'll talk about.
Go to Costco. You know,
and like even that. Safeway had it on sale this week for, gosh, under $5 a pound, which is great.
And it's a delicious fish. It has, it's a white fish. It's great for any kind of application that you want to. Dense white fish to do, with the exception of grilling,
right?
Where it kind of sticks to the grill. But,
okay, we'll talk about some of those applications on some of the recipes that you put together right after this. It's the KSRO Good Food Hour with Chef John Ash.
The election talk turned up.
There isn't a good candidate on either side of the aisle.
KSRO, Sonoma County's News Talk.
Honey, we need to make reservations for Buckley for spring break and Easter. He loves going to daycare at Paradise Pet Resorts. Let's see if they have room for boarding.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, it makes it so much easier to leave him, knowing they'll take care of him like he's their own.
Paradise Pet Resorts will take great care of your furry family member. You get to go away, and your pet gets a vacation. See for yourself on the webcams. Just download the app and look at all those wagging tails.
Dogs are pack animals who don't do well left alone all day. They need plenty of mental and physical exercise, as well as lots of opportunities to play, sniff, explore, and socialize. Doggy daycare is a practical solution for keeping your dog stimulated, as opposed to chewing, digging, and barking when you're not home.
Pets prefer Paradise. Pet tested, pet approved. Book now for boarding and daycare. Paradise Pet Resorts in Rohnert Park in Santa Rosa. ParadisePetResorts.com.
Oh, I'm Laura. Before you go.
Hey, Danny. What's up?
Did you hear it?
Yes. I heard the new jingle. Very catchy. Good job.
Thanks, Aunt Laura.
Okay, gotta go.
But, do you think everyone heard it?
Well, Danny, it is on the radio.
Because I want everyone to know that we are carrying on Grandpa Catelli's reputation.
We have the best plumbers around, and you've organized our office so well that
Okay, phew. Good. So, should I get that great big dancing noodle thingy for the front of the office?
Why don't we see how this radio ad here works first?
Oh, okay.
Don't want to use up all of our good ideas at once.
G-O-T-E-L-L-I, go tell me!
You're so wise. Kind of like a wizard.
Wizards of plumbing. I like that.
Visit us online at GatelliPlumbing.com.
Win a Chevy Camaro, cash, and more this April at Grayton Resort and Casino. We're giving away two Camaros, one at 6 p.m. and one at 10 p.m. Plus, 60 winners of cash and free slot play Saturday, April 27th. Thursdays, get a free entry into the up to $350,000 Starstruck slot tournaments. Not yet a Grayton Rewards member? Sign up today. Learn more at GraytonResortCasino.com. Complete rules available at the Rewards Center.
It's the KSRO Good Food Hour with me, Steve Garner, along with Chef John Ash. And John wrote a wonderful article about rockfish. I had the pleasure of working with you on executing some of these recipes.
So what did you make?
Well, I made the baked rockfish with tomatoes and capers. And these go together so easily. That's the beauty of these recipes. All the flavors is carried through the deliciousness of the fish.
Yeah.
And just on aluminum foil and in baked in the oven and
they cook
done.
very quickly and it's just a great fish to work with.
The next one was a fried rockfish aguadulce, which is a sweet and sour application.
That's what aguadulce means.
Sweet and sour.
Yeah.
Another way, and you say it's also known as escabeche, is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Another wonderful quick idea. And I like, of course, anything fried is wonderful. That was the fried rockfish. And you use just a little panko breadcrumb for that and a skillet, John, and that worked together very, very quickly.
Yeah.
There's also the rockfish with a balsamic vinegar butter sauce, and I told you that was one of my favorites.
Well, it's one of my favorites, too. It's something you need to eat. You can make it a little bit ahead, but you kind of need to make at the last minute, but it is so delicious,
oh, gosh,
and it uses white balsamic vinegar, so that it's a It's a lovely color.
Something I wasn't familiar with, and I could have just eaten that by the spoonful.
Yeah.
And there's also, of course, the classic fish tacos with citrus salsa and cabbage slaw, and I think easily to do. And then this was really cool, the rockfish and asparagus salad with a spicy lime dressing.
Yeah, this is one of my favorite salads of all, because it brings together asparagus, oranges, and it makes you make with it a kind of spicy lime dressing that is, it's kind of a reminder of Thai flavors.
It was great.
So it's good.
There was the pan-fried rockfish with tomatillo and avocado salsa. That's self-explanatory. And I loved the blackened rockfish fillets. A lot of flavor in that one.
Yeah, yeah.
And the presentation is beautiful.
So blackening, it was kind of an homage to
Paul Prudhomme.
Mm-hmm. When he started that with redfish, and rockfish is often thrown in the redfish category, but it's not redfish. Redfish is a different species that is only available on the Gulf Coast, but it works wonderfully with this.
Look for all those recipes on the KSRO website now. Just go to the KSRO Good Food Hour and look for recipes, and you'll see rockfish, all those recipes we just spoke with. Coming up next, a fabulous chef, author, activist. We love talking with him, and it's been a number of years. Bryant Terry coming up next.
Sonoma County's News Talk, KSRO, on FM at 103.5 in Santa Rosa and Windsor, and now at 96.9 in Petaluma.
Hi, it's Dennis from the Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market at Luther Burbank Center. I'd like to talk a bit about our market. Sure, we have great coffee, crepes, salsa, sausage, fruits, veggies, crafts, and much, much more. But to me, it's what you can't buy that makes the market special, and that's the people. You may have heard me speak with Steve on Saturday mornings on Garden Talk about buying potatoes from Tom or mushrooms from Barbara, forgetting to mention their business names. This is due to the relationships developed with those who grow the food we eat, something you can't get at the big supermarket chains. The vendors are a great resource to help create the perfect meal for you and your family. Bring your kids, grab a bite and something to drink, and shop the farmers market voted the best farmers market in Sonoma County 2 years running in the Press Democrats Readers Poll. We've been doing this for 50 years. We must be doing something right. So come and visit us at the Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market, Wednesdays and Saturdays, 8:30 to 1.
It's personal, and it's your choice. You've contemplated cosmetic surgery for a long time. Maybe it's cosmetic breast surgery, a reduction, lift, or augmentation. Or maybe you wanted smart lipo body contouring for a long time. Dr. Tom and his caring staff understand your concerns are personal and confidential.
It is personal. We take our time and walk you through the whole process. Our philosophy, you, the patient, are part of the surgical team. That's why we include you in the decision-making process.
How do I get started?
It's easy. Just call our office. Our wonderful surgical liaison will listen to your concerns and arrange for a virtual or in-office consultation.
Dr. Tom, you use local anesthesia for cosmetic surgery?
Yes. Local anesthesia is safe and well-tolerated by our patients. You can actually have breakfast the day of your surgery, and you will appreciate the quicker recovery with less discomfort.
Voted best cosmetic surgeon of Sonoma County 8 years in a row. Call Dr. Tom for a complimentary consultation online at drtomcosmetic.com.
On the battlefield, there's a saying America's military men and women live by. Never leave a fallen warrior behind, ever. Off the battlefield, Wounded Warrior Project operates with the same goal. Wounded Warrior Project was created to help our men and women returning home with the scars of war, whether those scars are physical or mental. Wounded Warrior Project, we never leave a fallen warrior behind, ever. Learn more about what we do at woundedwarriorproject.org.
I'm Steve Garner, along with Chef John Ash in the KSRO Kitchen, celebrating our 38th year, America's longest-running radio program. And it was a while ago we first met Bryant Terry when he was visiting us in Santa Rosa in 2014 for the release of Afro Vegan from Fresh African, Caribbean, and Southern Flavors Mixed, Farm Fresh, and which I believe was his fourth cookbook. I'm just guessing, but we'll clarify that. And that was published by 10 Speed Press. And then his next book was in 2020, for the release of his, I think, fifth book, Vegetable Kingdom, The Abundant World of Vegan Recipes. And we missed speaking with Bryant for his 2021 the cookbook, and that was called Black Food. So this morning, we're going to rectify that, catch up with him, and say good morning, Bryant, and thanks for joining us today.
Hey, guys. Thank you so much for having me on. So great to reconnect. And I have to say, it is serendipitous that we are circling back because Afrovegan, for which we first had the interview, is actually celebrating its 10-year anniversary on Monday.
Wow.
So, just feeling like this is it's all coming, closing the loop.
Well, congratulations. You were just a youngster, just growing a beard at that point, as I recall, when we met you. Well, we're especially really happy to talk with you this morning because we want to let our listeners know about an appearance that you'll be making next Sunday. That's April 14th at the Downtown Central Santa Rosa Library. Can you tell us what you're going to be doing during that event?
Yeah, I'm very excited to come up to the library and connect with people. And I will be doing a lecture demo, as it is, in which I'll be demonstrating a simple dish and, you know, giving people kind of the demonstrating the dish, but also sharing a lot of nuts and bolts, tips and tools that I like to use in the kitchen to help people be more efficient home cooks. And I'd be remiss if when I'm presenting, if I didn't talk about my efforts over the past more than two decades now, around helping to create a more healthful, just, and sustainable food system and ensuring that everyone has access to good food and, you know, the human right to clean air and clean water and clean soil. So, yeah, I'll be doing all that.
Well, you've been a very important voice, not only in the cookbook world, but in the activism world and for food justice, as you mentioned. The new book, Black Food: Stories, Art, and Recipes from Across the African Diaspora, is kind of a departure because it's not just all your recipes.
Yeah, this book, you know, it came about in 2020 during the pandemic when we were all stuck inside and, you know, kind of in the midst of this moment in which a lot of people were kind of reckoning with some of the ways in which Black people have been mistreated historically in this country and even contemporarily. But I really wanted to create a book that was celebrating the diverse food ways of the African diaspora, and I thought that it was important for this book to move beyond just my thoughts and views and perspectives, but really brought in these diverse voices from around the globe. And you know, sometimes I get a little, I don't know, almost, it's like I have this visceral response when I talk about the book because we put that book together in 9 months. Typically, it takes about, you know, a year to write a book and then a year for a production. But it was important for us to get the book out quickly. And I remember just having months of calls with, you know, maybe like six to 10 calls per day with people from around the globe, convincing them of the importance of this book. And I didn't have to do a lot of convincing. But, you know, it's bringing together essays and poetry and artwork. And, of course, delicious recipes. And I couldn't be prouder of this book in terms of just kind of planting the pole and saying that this is who we are. This is us and our beauty and diversity. And, you know, that book is it's a good one.
So did you guide the recipes that were submitted, or were those spontaneous from the person who you talked to?
That's a great question. I didn't want to be overly prescriptive about the recipes. As you know, most of my body of work has been, you know, plant-based and vegan recipes. And I didn't want to kind of make this book reductive in that way. I thought it was important that I allowed each contributor to offer the recipe or the dish that felt most important to them, that felt like it really expressed their culinary viewpoint or their kind of history or memories that they wanted to share with the world. That being said, you know, there are the themes of the chapters from migration to Black women, food and power, to Black queer food. And so I had a general sense of the type of recipes that I needed to go in each chapter and which chefs would be most fitting for offering those recipes. But once I gave people the general structure, I just really gave them the space to, you know, come up with something that made sense for them.
Can I read from the opening chapter, page 10, if you don't mind, Bryant?
Of course.
I just love this. It was like a opening sermon from the pulpit. The first one is called From Scratch by Reverend Marvin K. White. And I just want to quickly read this first paragraph because it knocked me out. It says, quote, on the first day, God made a meal plan, finally had it all figured out, finally had a taste for something. On the second day, God made a grocery list, one of everything God thought. On the third day, God planted a garden, God's own farmer's market. On the fourth day, God sharpened God's knives. God created iron and cast it into skillets. On the fifth day, God chopped, baked, boiled, braised, broiled, fried, grilled, roasted, poached, steamed, and stewed. For hours, God stewed. On the sixth day, God opened all the pots, and a mist went up from the pots and watered the whole face of God, and God sweat the vegetables. On the seventh day, God created company, and they came over, and they ate with God. And God looked around at God's kitchen and ended their work, which they had done, and they rested. What an opening paragraph.
Great reading of that.
Well, maybe I missed my calling. I should have been on the pulpit instead of behind the radio microphone.
Well, you are.
in a way.
No, I was so grateful for Reverend Marvin K. White offering that opening. You know, I wanted to, just coming from a Christian background, I did walk away from Catholicism a while ago, but it's still in my bones. And I felt that it was fitting to start the book with something that felt like a prayer before a meal that really kind of grounded us in this reality that, you know, the food that gets to our plate, it takes so many things for it to get there, whether it's like, you know, the kind of like farmers who are planting the food and tending it and harvesting it, to the people who are transporting it often, to the chefs that make it. And I wanted to just help people be mindful of the fact that all those things are infused in our food. You know, when we are eating a delicious apple, it's just not that apple itself, but it's the sun, it's the water, it's the soil, it's the hands that tended it, it's those who harvested it, that. And I think if people have that perspective and that kind of understanding of the interconnection of all these things, I would hope that it would encourage a little more reverence to, you know, the way that we're cooking and growing, cooking, and eating food.
So in the very beginning, also, there's something I need to ask you what this bird is, the Sankofa bird. And you have a quote there that says, this book is a Sankofa bird, standing astride the crossroads of past and present, with a neck craning back to what came before, measuring our progress. Its feet point toward what is to come, with an egg signifying the future held protectively in her beak. So what is that bird?
Yeah. So Sankofa is a word in the Twi language of Ghana in West Africa.
Uh-huh.
And it simply means to retrieve. And, you know, it's symbolic. It's symbolized by this bird, as you mentioned, that is walking forward with its beak turned backwards. And this is a guiding philosophy of, you know, many traditional West African cultures. But it's something that was embedded in me as a child from my family, that, you know, we always should be reverent towards and uplifting our ancestors and their traditions. And as we move forward, you know, we can't progress without having this reverence for and, you know, kind of uplifting these traditions to help guide us as we move forward. And, you know, this book, I think, is really symbolic of that in that, you know, it's a diverse mix of recipes that feel like they're cutting edge, they're new. Many of them are kind of reimagining older recipes, and some of them are just kind of plays on traditional recipes in the way that many of us might have experienced them growing up. And I wanted this book just to contain multitudes and give people a sense of, you know, the ever-evolving nature of not just culture, but food cultures, and know that, you know, we can be rooted and grounded, and we should be rooted and grounded in these culinary traditions of our ancestors. And we can bring them forward as we're innovating and, you know, creating something that feels fresh and new and exciting.
We're going to take a break, Brian. When we come back, we're going to jump into some recipes in the next section and also talk about these just knockout graphics and photography in this book. We were just blown away.
And poems and all of that.
It's just gorgeous. It's called Black Food, Stories, Art, and Recipes from Across the African Diaspora. Bryant Terry is our guest, and he'll be here in Santa Rosa next Sunday, April 14th, at the Central Library. I'm Steve Garner, along with Chef John Ash in the Chaos Ordo Kitchen.
Whatever the story, have your say.
I'm sick of them wasting tax dollars on useless indictments.
It's the topics that matter to me.
KSRO, Sonoma County's News Talk.
As winter embraces the north, ARS Roofing and Gutters is here to ensure your home stays warm, dry, and secure. ARS is your premier choice for winter roofing and gutter needs in Sonoma and Marin counties. Under the leadership of President and CEO Letitia Hanke, ARS is not just a roofing expert, it's a community-driven force. Did you know that Letitia Hanke founded the Lime Foundation? This nonprofit organization is making a real impact on the lives of our youth and seniors through programs like the Next Gen Trades Academy. The Next Gen Trades Academy introduces underserved and at-risk youth to alternative career paths in the trades, creating opportunities and transforming lives. But let's not forget about your winter roof needs. ARS is equipped for routine maintenance, repairs, and emergencies. Save our 24-hour hotline number, 707-584-5900. Trust ARS to keep you warm and dry year-round. More info at arsroofing.com. ARS Roofing and Gutters, your winter shield against the elements with a commitment to community.
Some days I cover up because of my moderate to severe plaque psoriasis. Now I'm hitting the road with clearer skin thanks to Skyrizi, Risankizumab Riza, a prescription-only 150 milligram injection for adults who are candidates for systemic or phototherapy. Nothing is everything. With Skyrizi, 3 out of 4 people achieved 90% clearer skin at 4 months. And Skyrizi is just 4 doses a year after 2 starter doses.
Don't use if allergic to Skyrizi. Serious allergic reactions and an increased risk of infections or a lower ability to fight them may occur. Before treatment, your doctor should check for infection and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms, such as fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, or if you plan to or recently received a vaccine.
Thanks to Skyrizi, there's nothing on my skin, and that means everything. Ask your doctor today about Skyrizi, the number one dermatologist prescribed biologic in psoriasis. And visit Skyrizi.com or call 1-866-SKYRIZI to learn more.
Win a Chevy Camaro, cash, and more this April at Grayton Resort and Casino. We're giving away 2 Camaros, one at 6 p.m. and one at 10 p.m. Plus, 60 winners of cash and free slot play Saturday, April 27th. Thursdays, get a free entry into the up to $350,000 Starstruck slot tournaments. Not yet a Grayton Rewards member? Sign up today. Learn more at GraytonResortCasino.com. Complete rules available at the Rewards Center.
It's the most wonderful time of the year. That's right. It's Chick Days at the Feed Store in Sebastopol. Starting March 14th through June, the Feed Store will have baby chicks and everything you could possibly need to care for them, most especially the years and years of knowledge for knowing how to care for your new backyard brood. The Feed Store in Sebastopol, your one-stop shop for all your large and small animal feed and needs. Happy Chick Days!
KSRO, AM, FM, and online. Depend on it.
In the Chaos Ordo Kitchen, I'm Steve Garner, along with Chef John Ash, being joined with, by a way too long absence from our Chaos Ordo Kitchen, Bryant Terry. Bryant will be coming to Santa Rosa next Sunday, April 14th. There is a wait list for his live appearance, cooking demo, and chat, but you can go to the Sonoma County Central Library website and get on the wait list. The new book is Black Food, Stories, Art, and Recipes from Across the African Diaspora. John, you're an artist. What are your take on the book?
I was knocked out by it. The photography is, well, all of it is really great, but the photography and the artwork are so they're not usual cookbook things at all.
You know, I thank you all so much for the kind words about the visuals in the book. And, you know, I really, as I mentioned in the introduction to the book, I wanted a book that feels like it could easily pivot from your nightstand because there's so much just rich and in-depth content in here for people to dig into. To your kitchen, because obviously there are, you know, recipes are a thread throughout the book, and I want people cooking. I want people making these dishes from these talented chefs. But then I, you know, said that I wanted to be able to rest on your coffee table, and I wanted a book that felt like, you know, it's something that people who may not necessarily be home cooks or maybe they don't want to dig into the heady intellectual content or the kind of creative writing, but they love beautiful images, moving images and powerful images, and, you know, can really just meditate on those. And I think that the book does a good job of kind of successfully holding all those things. And I don't know if I told you guys, well, no, we haven't spoken in almost a decade. So I haven't told you that I'm currently back in graduate school at UC Berkeley working on an MFA in art. And so, you know, my interest in visual arts, I'm really excited about further deepening that and getting the training to deepen my studio practice and to make more visual arts. And also just to think more in terms of, like, what kind of work do I want to be curating that's similar to Black Food, where I'm bringing together really talented, creative people to, you know, make something that's spectacular.
Beautiful. Why don't we jump into the book? Some of the recipes and highlights you noticed, John.
Well, it's kind of, I shouldn't say this, but the recipes are not as important as the
narrative,
as what you're talking
stories.
About. Yeah, what you're talking about there and what the contributors are talking about. You know, it's very personal, and it's interesting to get a point of view from all of these folks, many of whom I'd never heard of.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I wanted the book to be kind of a diversity of people who are, you know, well-known. They're folks who you've seen on TV or you've read their cookbooks. And it was really important to me to reach deeper and bring in, you know, new voices and bring in voices that are from, you know, continents away, but who are doing really impactful and important work. And, you know, there's all the stuff I talked about. There's the essays, the artwork, but, you know, the real meat or the tofu, if you will, of the book are these recipes. And I'm so proud of the recipes in this book and got a chance to, you know, actually taste most of the dishes when we were on set, you know, doing the photography for the book. And I think that, you know, it's just one of those things. It's like a kind of culinary survey. It's one thing to talk about all these foods that you find throughout the African diaspora, but to be able to taste them kind of embodied and have all those histories and memories, you know, in your mouth and digesting them, I think, you know, it moves beyond just like taking in information, but it's actually like you're digesting so many kind of deep histories. And I read that was important for me, is like to tell the story, not just through words and visuals, but through the food as well.
Could I bring up one recipe that really resonated with my wife? I showed my wife the book, and she started to tear up on one recipe, because this recipe that you wrote, the Dirty South Hot Tamales.
Yeah.
when my wife was a girl, young, growing up in Chicago, on many summer nights, her and her dad would walk down Stony Island Boulevard in Southside Chicago and buy tamales from their local tamale man in his cart. And she said she recalls feeling that steam and that aroma when he opened that cart, and they would take those tamales, sit on the curb on a humid summer night in Chicago, and enjoy those tamales. And it was one of the most important and valuable times she ever spent with her dad. So thank you for including that, because you did the same thing with your dad in Memphis, Tennessee.
Thank you for sharing that memory. That is so cool to hear, and just to, like, you know, see those parallels. When I'm kind of ruminating on my childhood, those moments with my dad where we would go to the tamale man and pick up that cart, and I agree, when he opened up that card, that kind of like, I mean, just bombarding my senses with that smell and the heat from that card and the steam. And then, you know, just getting our tamales and going and sitting in the car, sitting on the hood of the car. Like, those are some of my fondest memories of, you know, spending time with my dad. And, you know, I always, when we talk, we just talk about, like, you know, just the good old days.
Yeah.
Those hot tamales are very prominent in those memories.
So can you describe the hot tamales? This isn't the traditional tamales in a can, Gebhardt or somebody that we know. This is a very different creation.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this one, I actually, in a lot of tamale making, there's some masa that's used. But this one, I wanted to give it that, quote, kind of dirty south feel by actually using grits. And, you know, it's made in a similar way that you would a traditional tamale, by just making your dough and putting everything together and filling them and steaming them. But definitely having these yellow grits that have been soaked and reconstituted as the base feels like it is very specific to my own culture and cultural foods. And, you know, I don't know. I'm imagining that there's a lot of discussion around, like, you know, just the origins and the history and kind of like the development of these tamales that were made in the South. And, you know, I imagine that they use grits, but maybe it was a combination of grits and masa. But, you know, this version, I feel like the grits are very fitting, and they just taste fantastic.
I want to just jump ahead quickly, because besides recipes, you have some dynamite cocktails in the book. And I want to shout out one, the whiskey sour that Tony Tipton Martin included. And in there, she teaches us about a man named Nathan Green, who was America's first African-American master distiller, who was the man who taught Jack Daniels the charcoal mellowing technique for filtering whiskey.
Yeah, no, I love that she surfaced that history and that story. And I don't know if you are aware of the whole Uncle Nearest brand, which is, you know, the family of this gentleman. And, you know, there are just so many of these kind of untold stories around food origins that I think, you know, are waiting to be told. And this was just, for me, kind of a model of how something that's mundane that we often experience every day and just really, you know, have no idea that there was a Black person who was instrumental in kind of like the shape and development of these things. But, you know, in addition to that, there are a number of drinks in this book that, you know, I tapped some of the, I would dare I say, some of our most brilliant mixologists. So yeah, you know, there's the food, there's the desserts, and there's some really yummy cocktails and other drinks in the book as well.
So are we losing a lot of these traditional recipes and techniques, do you think? I was looking at things which I don't know a lot about, but like Perlu, which is a gullah kind of concoction. Are those still around? Can we still get them?
Yeah, well, I think that there's a younger generation of Black culinary creatives who are working hard to preserve these traditions and these recipes. You know, it's been exciting to see, you know, people who understand that there is a lot of the elders are getting older and passing away. And so we're mining these stories, we're talking to our elders, and I just want to encourage people, and this is, you know, from whatever culture or whatever geographic location that you're from, in the face of our industrialized food system where, you know, most people are eating food that is being produced by corporations, I think it's so important that we talk to our, you know, nanas and you know, meemaws and peepaws and papaws and big mamas and learn about these traditions of growing and cooking and eating so that we can continue to pass down these stories. And that was a big part of what this book was about for me as well.
Well, it's a magnificent effort. Black food, stories, art, and recipes from across the African diaspora, edited and curated by Brian Terry. It came out a few years ago, and it's great that it's back in circulation and that you're making the rounds, telling the story of all these marvelous instrumental people who you included in the book. Remember, he is appearing next Sunday, that's the 14th of April, at the Central Library at Sonoma County for a demo, a cooking demo, a chat, a lecture, and of course a book signing. It is sold out. It's a free event, but you will need to register to get on the wait list. So go to the Sonoma County Main Library website. And I believe I was told that this might be archived and you might be able to see Brian's lecture online, and I'll have more information about that next week. But we wish you a safe journey all the way from Oakland up to Santa Rosa, and have a great time at the library, and we hope that we can see you in person real soon. Thanks for joining, and John and me, Bryant.
Thank you for having me on. Always a pleasure to chat with you.
Good. We'll talk again soon. Thanks for joining us in the KS Hardo Kitchen. We'll be back next week. We hope you will, too.